So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you find yourself surfing the web too much, checking your emails a lot, texting, maybe you're tweeting, there are times when I feel like I'm on a little technology overload. There are times when I've been on my emails and somebody has sent something and I'm on my email to do maybe to send a message, but I, oh, that sounds interesting, and I click on that, and before I know it, I'm on the web and I can hardly remember what the original intent was. Well, I tell you what, Joanne Canner has written a book. It's called Conquer Cyber Overload, Get More Done, Boost Your Creativity, and Reduce Stress. And I'm telling you, it is a fascinating book. I finished it last night and really enjoyed it, and even tried to put in practice a few things this morning already. Although I stumbled last night after I finished reading the book, I picked up something else and started reading it, so I don't remember as much about the book as I probably should. Anyway, Joanne's with us, and she'll explain all this for us at 1-800-642-1234. You can join us. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Joanne Canner, welcome.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me and for saying such nice things about my book.
Oh, it was a really good, a very enlightening read.
Thank you.
I don't know, hardly know where to begin. There are so many experiences of my own that I could relate to. I think we've come so used to being connected. I mean, we're connected all the time, and we're used to getting fairly rapid responses from people. I'll tell you one little story, and then we can go on. I had a student email me, and she emailed me at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was in a meeting. And in fact, I didn't get home from the meeting until 8 o'clock, and the student had asked a question of me. Well, when I returned home, there was an email from the department chair who said, why didn't you respond to this email from this other person? Well, she had not known. The student had, after a couple of hours, sent an email to the department chair saying that I hadn't responded to her question, and she was having trouble getting me to respond, and so would she help her out?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and it took me a few minutes. I had to click back down and find her original email, and I thought, well, that was only 3 hours ago.
Well, that's one of the side effects of these wonderful new gadgets is that we have created expectations that we're available to anyone, anywhere, 24/7. And that causes a lot of difficulties, including your life. Yeah. And, for professors, the expectations are that you're available at any moment. And people... and you can have that in business, too, where people are used to having their colleagues respond immediately whenever they send something. The bottom line is, if they do that, they don't get anything done, and they don't use their brain effectively. So although these gadgets are really good, I mean, they really help us in so many ways, if we don't take control over them, they're going to dominate us in so many ways that we're going to really... lower our brain capacity is one of the things that one of my conclusions is if you want to use your brain to its fullest, you have to let it operate in the way that it's best meant to operate, which is to have some time to focus on one thing and finish that before you do something else.
And I hardly ever do that. If the television set happens to be on in the evening, I'm usually online answering emails or whatever. So it seems like I'm always doing two or three things at the same time, and I'm certain I'm not the only one.
Yes, well, in fact, I mean, I describe myself as a recovering cyber addict myself. And one of the reasons I discovered that was I thought I was losing my memory. I was under a lot of stress, and I wasn't getting much done. And as I looked at the research, I realized I was doing everything wrong. And when I cut back... my memory came back and my stress levels went way down. So, but everybody has the same reaction because these wonderful devices do so many wonderful things to us, but they're like newborn babies that, you know, they beep, they, whatever. They want your attention right away. And you have to learn to say, no, not right now. I'll be there, but not right now. And that's something that you need to learn how to do, because our default mode is whenever anybody calls us, when everybody attracts our attention, we go there. And that's the way we're built. That's the way our brains are built.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's the way my brain is built anyway. Joanne Canner, our guest today, a professor here at the University of Wisconsin, who in the Department of Communication and Arts, who has done a lot of work in this area, and her book is entitled Conquer Cyber Overload. She does a lot of research, and she also does a lot of speaking to companies and corporations around the U.S., maybe around the world. I don't know. We'll ask her about that, on how to become more productive. Maybe you have a question for her about how to become more productive, or maybe you've got an experience to share about cyber overload. I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us, the email address. If you're emailing and listening at the same time, email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. It does seem to be quite addictive, this whole cyber connectedness business.
Well, it really is. And we have curiosity. And the trouble is, your example of going to answer an email and then ending up wandering through cyberspace for a long time, that happens to everybody, because there's always something more interesting than what you're doing. And it not only is available to you, it comes after you, because we get these alerts and things pop up. And it's very, you know, I find myself having to say, if I want to get, I'm writing something, I want to get this something done, I have to turn my email program off, because if I see that little number come up, I can't resist looking at it. And so what I do is I'm the master of my interruptions. That is, I work on what I'm working on, not for hours and hours, but until I'm stuck, or until it's time to take a break. And then I go and check out who's just emailed me. And it works so much better. But if you let that little number come up, there are very few people who have the ability to say, oh, I'll leave that till later.
You're right about that. I'm telling you, this whole business about multitasking was really interesting to me. And people think they can multitask, but that's really not happening, is it? Explain that.
Yes, well, people think they're doing two things at once, but your brain cannot focus attention on more than one thing at a time. So let's say you're answering your emails and watching TV. What's happening is that you're working on the email, then you're paying attention to the TV, and you've lost what you're doing. When you come back, you have to say, where was I, etc. And when you're doing that, you're not really processing what's on television. So the problem is, you're doing a worse job. Let's say this is a business email. Mm-hmm. You're not doing a good job on that. But also, you are not enjoying the television either. So you're really, you know, it's the worst of both worlds. And what I tell people in my presentations to business, and also I talk to students now who are very receptive, surprisingly receptive, when you show them what the effects are by letting them do brain exercises that show how inept they are at multitasking. Explain to them that you could actually do these two tasks faster and better, one after the other, than if you tried to do them at the same time, and you'd probably have time left over to watch that television program. So it's actually, if you follow my advice, it's a win-win, because you actually do have more time to do what you really like to do, and you can really enjoy that, rather than just kind of half enjoying it and doing the work in a shoddy fashion.
Anna in Madison, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you so much. This is a topic near and dear to my heart, and it's great to hear you, Professor.
Thank you.
I'm a faculty member at Madison Area Technical College, and for the last almost 10 years, I've taught all my classes online, which means I am deeply absorbed into how to wrangle all the information. And I have two things that have grown out of my experience. The first one is that I tell people I've stopped multitasking. I'm focusing on tasking.
Yes, that's good.
You know, because it's like, I think everything you're saying is absolutely true, that if you think that you can do more than one thing, you actually can't, you know, unless it's snoring while you're asleep. But the other one is that I gave up doing email. And I have found tremendous relief and success in doing this. And what I do instead is allow students to call or text me. And there are ways of, you know, best practices we've talked about. You know, some people don't want to give out their personal
information. Yeah. But that's something worth talking about. Here we are. We got to take a little break, unfortunately. And Anna, if you want to hang on. If not, I think we'll get a good response from our guest today, Joanne Cantor, in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us. Talking about how you can conquer cyber overload today here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Professor Joanne Cantor of the University of Wisconsin. She has a new book out. It's called Conquer Cyber Overload, Get More Done, Boost Your Creativity, Reduce Stress. Would you like to do that? I'd like to get more done. I'd like to boost my creativity, and I would certainly love to reduce my stress. So, and she's put together a fascinating book that is easy to read, doesn't take long to read, but you can learn an awful lot in a pretty short period of time. Join in with your own questions or comments or maybe your own experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Joanne, we had a caller on earlier who said, you can't multitask, and he's pretty much agreeing with you on that.
Right, and clearly anybody who looks at the research shows not only can you not do it, but brain researchers show that when you're multitasking, you're only using a lower portion of your brain to do each task. So you're actually dumbing down your brain and dimming your bulb, so it doesn't work at all. And there's other research that shows that people who multitask a lot are not good at it. In fact, heavy multitaskers are worse at multitasking tasks than light multitaskers. So don't keep trying to get better. You're not going to get better. People who multitask it do it for other reasons, and it may be because they're bored. But what I like to suggest is that if you have something to do that you're not don't really enjoy that much, if you multitask it, you're just going to extend the pain because it's going to take you so much longer. You may not do it right the first time, so you might have to do it twice. Better just concentrate on it, get it done, and then reward yourself with that extra time and do something you enjoy.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you put this into a book.
Yeah.
Some people might say, why a book?
Yes, well, I wasn't going to write a book at first. It grew out of all these talks I was giving and the responses from my audiences. But I decided that a book was good to have something to hold in your hand. But I made the book really short because the people who need it don't have time to read a long book. And I also designed it so that it has a lot of headlines and pull quotes and lists. That's what people are used to doing on the internet. They're not used to reading paragraphs. So you can read it all the way through and get a lot of extra information. But if you get frustrated and say, no, I just want the meat of it, you can just turn to those pages with tips. And also, it's available on Kindle and Smashwords, which is another website where you don't even have to have a Kindle. You can just download it in a PDF so that people who can't stand to put their laptop down and pick up a book can still read it, and they can still look and see if somebody's trying to contact them. So it's different. Books are still here, but they're really ebbing as the primary way people are getting their information.
Frankly, I still like books.
I do too. Yeah.
Let's go to Greg in Racine. Hi, Greg. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I'm enjoying this conversation, and I'm very much agreeing with a lot of what's being said. I do want to take exception, however, to what just sounds to me a little bit like oversimplification or painting with a broad brush in terms of people's capacity to multitask. I mean, my experience, first of all, I think I'm really good at multitasking, and I'd be game to take any test to demonstrate it. But more important than that is that I see around me a really wide range when it comes to that, or that kind of capacity being split brain. I think some people are not split brain at all, and they really, really have to focus on something, or they just can't do it at all. And then I think there are other people like us who, where, I mean, maybe they're still on some level, we aren't acting at our optimum level or something, but we actually very successfully multitask and are happier doing it. And it's we are wired just slightly differently. I just wonder if your guest would comment on that possibility that there is some range when you look at the whole human population.
Oh, sure. Okay. Go ahead, Joanne.
Well, there definitely is a range of abilities to handle two jobs at the same time. You're not actually multitasking in the sense that you're processing two streams of information at the same time. You're going back and forth between these two tasks. That's what your attention is doing. Now, there are differences, age differences in the ability to hold thoughts in your mind while you do something else, so that people that what we call working memory peaks at the age of 25, and then it starts going down. But even people who are better at doing that are still better at single tasking than multitasking. Now, but you get to choose what, you know. What do you want to accomplish out of what are you doing, whatever you're doing? So if you're doing something where, let's say, if you're not writing or you're not trying to solve a creative problem, you're doing something more mundane and you also want to have the TV on at the same time, you might slow yourself down a little, but the quality may not be too much worse. So, I mean, part of it is to choose where you want to give up quality and time for something that's a little bit more entertaining. Now, there are a lot of people who say, I can't work unless I've got music on in the background. And I talk to students like that who say that too. And so what I urge them to do, I don't urge people to completely never multitask. I urge them to find what works for them. Now, certain things that students are doing, maybe some quiet music in the background will work. But they realize that if they're trying to watch TV and read, that they can't do it. And not only can they not make very much progress, but what they get out of that reading is just kind of rote memory. If they have to integrate it with something they knew before or use it and generalize to a new situation, it's ineffective. So there are different tasks that might benefit from single tasking more than others, and there are differences. Obviously, there are a lot of great individual differences. But brain researchers know that our brains really can't multitask their attention. They can switch back and forth, and there are trade-offs there.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Greg, for calling. Appreciate it. Kristen in Sparta, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Kristen.
Well, hello there. How are you guys today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I just was so tickled when I heard that you were going to be speaking, and I'm glad to know that there's a book out there that might help us. I thought I was losing my mind, and it's because exactly what you said, your comments at the beginning there, was that you're just using a lower portion of your brain so that you start to lose memory and you're stressed out more, and I was feeling that myself. And then you compound that. I have a husband that travels, and he lives by his iPhone, and he has people that are calling him and emailing him from Afghanistan all the way to Anchorage. And so I can't even sleep in the same room as him now because it keeps dinging every time there's a message, and he gets 50 messages during the night. And, of course, he sleeps through because he's exhausted from traveling and then catches up when he wakes up. But the fact that he can't turn it off and concentrate on where he is at the moment that he is someplace is so frustrating. We had his Father's Day, his birthday party last week, and he took a call during dinner.
Yeah. Well,
it's just there's no etiquette, and he feels obligated to the phone that he can't let go of the internet and those people needing that immediate response. If you could speak to that.
Absolutely. A very interesting situation. Well, first of all, I would say if you, and for what it's worth, I would say if he's not going to answer that phone when he's sleeping, then you ought to try and convince him to put that cell phone in another room so that you can sleep. You know, if he's not going to answer it. Now, if he feels like he wants to live the life where he's available 24/7 to people around the world, that's a lifestyle choice he can make. But clearly he shouldn't be impacting your sleep by sleeping through it and having the phone in the room. But the other questions, the etiquette questions, are really interesting. And in fact, last year, Jerry Seinfeld came to the Overture Center here, and he did a wonderful bit about the BlackBerry and how he had lost his wife to the BlackBerry. He used to have her attention, but he'll talk to her and they're in a nice quiet conversation, and then suddenly her eyes glaze over and they look down at the BlackBerry. And he talked about how it's so deflating. And it is. I mean, it's like you're going to you're with your family or you're with somebody you like at a party. And you're talking to them, and their eyes are wandering around the room to see if there's somebody more interesting there. That's what happens when our interpersonal situations are interfered with by this constant looking at somebody else. And you have to really talk about what this says. What is this person saying to you? Well, there may be somebody more interesting to me right now. And so a lot of families have to talk about the problem of answering their cell phones at dinner. Now there are a few emergency situations that you need to be able to respond to, but other than that, it takes some decisions and rules and discipline to try and have your relationship with your family and not let everything else interfere 24/7.
Yeah.
Oh,
we're losing. Unfortunately, Kristen, we're losing you here. I wish we could keep you on, but I think your cell phone's you might be getting out of our area or something. But we can't hear you anymore. So I hope you were able to hear what Joanne had to say, and perhaps you might want to take a look at her book. And maybe purchase a copy for the husband and read it yourself.
One thing that I say when I talk to people who are in business, they say, but my boss thinks that he needs to interrupt me or she needs to interrupt me every minute and I never get anything done. And I talk about trying to find at least some time during the day where you can focus on your project or whatever, and then get back to these calls. And one of the things I suggest, and some people do this, at my presentations, they buy one for themselves and a copy for their boss. Because some of these things you can't tell people as well as you can give them all the background with the book.
I like the idea that you had for those of us who are working every day. Rather than put a sign up, busy, don't bother me on your door, say, I'll be back at whatever time.
At a particular time. Yeah, I've heard a lot of people in business say that do not disturb signs are not only resented, but they make people want to knock on the door even more. So that if you could find a little corner where you could escape to and tell people when you'll be back. Because when you say do not disturb, people get nervous that they're never going to be able to find you again. So if you give them a time when they can, when you know they'll be able to reach you, and also let somebody know where you are in case it's a real emergency, then that's kind of a compromise.
Yeah. or just stay in your office and close the door and say, I'll be back.
That's right. You could do that too, unless you have an office that's got a window or something like that,
where they can see you through the window. Okay. Well, this controlling of time. You know, we check our emails, we our cell phones, all these ways we interact through technology. It really is hard to pull away from all of it.
It's very hard, and I mean, I fight with it every day because there's a lot of interesting things coming in, and I have to remind myself every day, what do I want to be doing now? Do I want to get something done, or do I want to? There may be times where you want to sit there and let it all happen, but if you let it all happen all the time, then you're just going to be stressed out and get nothing done. And there are so many wonderful things, and the thing is, it's getting even better or worse, if you want to call it, because the technology keeps growing. And one of these things, you watch television, you say, oh, get this little thing that fits in your pocket, and you can watch any television program anywhere, you know, anytime. And so one of the problems with that is that we never have what you would call in the broadcasting business, clear air.
Yeah.
We get out of a meeting and we're walking out and we're checking our messages, and then we're going to something else. And in the car, we listen to the radio on the way home. And as soon as we get home, we turn on something. And we've lost that time to think. And one of the things that I've found is having some space where nothing is coming in allows what you've been working on to marinate and mm-hmm. consolidate. And so a lot of my good ideas, maybe a good turn of phrase or a good exercise that I might want to use in a presentation, come to me after I've been working, but while I'm walking to the next mm-hmm. thing. And Albert Einstein used to say that he would work really hard on a math problem, and when he would get stuck, he would go sailing, and the answer would often come to him on the water. And I talk about this creativity business a lot in my talks because it really is a fact that you can only cram so much information into your brain for a certain period of time. And then when you get away from it, that's when really the breakthrough occurs.
Well, that's when the brain processes information for you, and it's not busy doing the other.
It's processing that information, and it's relaxing. I mean, a lot of times you're working on a problem, and you think the answer is here. And that part of your brain, you're searching around in that part of your brain. And then when you relax a little bit and go here, then suddenly Your brain continues to cogitate and look for that answer, and suddenly it finds it over here. You wouldn't have found it over there if you kept focusing. So, and there's a lot of research about sleep that talks about how when you're sleeping, your brain is actually working on what you learned during the day, and you often wake up with a good idea. Be ready with a paper and pencil by your bed in the morning. Once you know this, you're going to discover that good night's sleep has yielded some really good ideas related to what you were trying to figure out yesterday.
I know if I'm asked to give a speech and I'm working on that speech, usually if I kind of go through things and work on it before I go to bed, and then I go to bed in the morning, it's amazing how clearer the speech is, and maybe there's some new ideas to bring to it.
It's absolutely true. And you know, the neuroscientists know what's going on in the brain now and how that works. But so I can't tell people to take naps at work, although some brain researchers do. But if you can, always start a project, large or small, at least one day before you have to finish it, because that overnight is going to give you tremendous amount of creative energy that's going to make that solution or that project or whatever you're writing much, much better.
And you've talked in the book about getting away, and you were sort of discussing that a little bit here, and there's actually even been research on where you get away to, walking in a nice area with trees and flowers, perhaps, or versus walking in a busy city street.
Yeah, it's It's interesting. So if you want to take that break, I call them brain enhancing breaks. You get away from what you're focusing on, and research shows that trees and flowers and water attract your attention, what they say, modestly, in quotes. It takes your focus away from that little area in your brain where you think the answer was, but it doesn't bombard you with sensations so that you're totally somewhere else, and your brain can do this cogitation. Exercise also is a very mm-hmm. good brain-enhancing break because it brings more oxygen to the brain, and it also facilitates the connections between neurons. And it doesn't have to be, you know, swimming a mile. It can be just taking a nice walk, walking up and down stairs. You don't even have to leave your office. But if you can and can look at some trees and flowers, all the better.
And I think you even said, or at least have a flower or something in your office
that
you can take a look at.
Right. Much better to look at flowers than to look at bricks and paper clips.
Genevieve emailed us from Madison. She said, I was getting so stressed out with so many emails, I started unsubscribing from almost all lists, and it made a huge difference in her stress level.
Absolutely. Well, I do. I have thought a lot about email since I've written the book, and I actually have a special report on my website that I'll tell you how you can get, which has specific tips for email, because there's a lot of different things you can do. Unsubscribing to lists is one thing. And I also, if you get my special report, you're also signed up for my email newsletter, which is really a contradiction in terms. But I only send it out once a month at the most. And I also recommend, one of the things I recommend is if you want to get those email lists, but you don't want to be interrupted, set your email to automatically send those particular newsletters directly into a folder. And then maybe whenever it works for you, once a day, once a week, look at that folder and get yourself up to date with those things. But don't let them come in directly. And I think the email inbox is a great source of stress, and also a great sort of source of making mistakes, not getting back to the right people. And so I have ideas on trying to keep that email inbox as small as you can, so that it doesn't overwhelm you and you're only looking at the things that are really important.
Oh, not a bad idea at all. Well, I tried this morning on your tasks. Instead of multitasking like I always do, I thought, okay, when I've got this task, I'm going to finish this task, then I'm going to go to the next task. It worked pretty well.
Oh, great. Well, I'm always amazed, and I find, you know, when I talk to students, and I've been doing these lectures for students, and I wasn't even going to do students because I thought they'll never listen to me. But when they do those brain exercises and realize how inept they are at multitasking, they like to listen. And I've gone back to them several weeks afterwards and said, has this made any difference in your studying? And a lot of people are so amazed. I think particularly young people have grown up multitasking and never single-tasked before. And they're amazed at how smart they are, you know, and how really they're amazed at how much more they get done and how much they understand, how they understand so much better.
What's your website?
Okay. My website is called Your Mind on Media. .com.
YourMindOnMedia.com.
Right.
And I assume people can order the book from there, or
they can go there, or they can go to Amazon. They can get my special report from there. And I also blog for PsychologyToday.com, and you can get the link from there too.
Joanne Kanter, thank you so much. Joanne's book, Conquer Cyber Overload. Thank you for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.